A Sad Cupbearer Made Glad, Chapter 124. Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, the same king who gave Ezra permission to return to Jerusalem, reigned many years over the mighty Persian Empire. You know Shushan was the capital. The royal palace was there, and there the mighty king lived. The splendor and the wealth in which the Persian monarchs lived cannot be described. Many distinguished courtiers surrounded the king and served him. One of these distinguished courtiers was the cupbearer. He moved daily in the immediate presence of the king. His duty was to pour the wine into the king's cup and then hand this cup, which he had filled, to the prince. This was a great honor, but also a dangerous honor. Dangerous? Why? Listen, kings have many friends, but often many enemies also. Sometimes these enemies are hidden even among the courtiers. They try to murder the king if they can. Just think of the two courtiers, Bigthana and Teresh, who made a conspiracy against Ahasuerus, which was uncovered by Mordecai, the cousin of Queen Esther. You still remember Ahasuerus had this history written in the Chronicles, don't you? Thus, these kings lived in danger every day. It would be very easy to put a little poison into the wine which the king would drink. For that reason, the kings had cupbearers. Such a cupbearer not only had to pour the wine into the king's cup, but he also had to do something else. The first cup of wine he had to drink himself. If the wine were poisoned, the cupbearer would die, and not the king. If the wine was not poisoned, the cupbearer had to fill a second cup of the same wine, and this cup the king would drink empty. The sovereign did this for his own safety. King Artaxerxes also had such a cupbearer. Now you understand why that position was so dangerous. The narrative which I am now going to relate to you tells about the cupbearer of Artaxerxes. This man's name was Nehemiah, and he belonged to the Jewish nation. Nehemiah was a man who feared God. He did not join in celebrating the ungodly feasts which were sometimes held at the royal court. Still, he was not melancholy. Just the opposite, he was always cheerful and merry. He always stood before the king with a friendly smile on his face. Besides, Nehemiah always performed his duty satisfactorily. Nothing ever was wrong with his work. Therefore, Artaxerxes could trust him completely, and it isn't any wonder that the king began to like him. He treated Nehemiah and associated with him as his friend. One day, Nehemiah receives visitors. Who are these men who have come to him? They are his brother, Hanani, and with a few other men. They have a long, dangerous journey behind them, for they have come from Jerusalem. Nehemiah is glad to see them. Undoubtedly, he hasn't seen his brother for many years, for it is already 13 years since Ezra had returned to the land of the Jews. We too are glad when we meet our relatives once again, aren't we? Behold, they sit together sociably. Nehemiah asks his brother how he is, if he is in good health. He asks him about the Jews in Jerusalem. Even though Nehemiah lives in the royal palace, he has not forgotten his people. Not a day passes by but he thinks of them. And now Hanani tells him the condition in Jerusalem is terrible. It is not going well in the land of Canaan. How is that? Nehemiah asks with great concern. Alas, Hanani answers honestly, the Jews who live in Jerusalem are in great distress. We are ridiculed and despised by everyone. Yes, the temple is rebuilt, but the rest remains unchanged. The walls still lie in ruins, and the gates are not put in place. Everything is in the same condition as when Nebuzaradan, the general of Nebuchadnezzar, left it. Yes, the houses are somewhat rebuilt, but we are not protected against the many enemies. At night, the beasts of prey roam about in the streets of Jerusalem. Oh, it is a sad, sad condition. Hanani shakes his head sadly and sits silently on his seat. Nehemiah is alarmed when he hears this. He did not know conditions were so bad. He weeps and mourns because of it. At night he cannot sleep. Regularly he bends his knees and makes known all his sorrow and misery to the Lord. Is that what you do too, boys and girls? Do you also tell the Lord everything? Does the Lord know from you all your cares and needs? Or don't you need the Lord? Nehemiah tells the Lord everything. He ponders and thinks about whether a change can be made, how it can be changed, and what can be done. A nice plan arises in his mind. But will it succeed? He is afraid, and he again bends his knees and asks the Lord if he will cause it to succeed. It isn't surprising that Nehemiah is sadly disposed in the days that follow. He cannot be cheerful and merry when he thinks of his fellow countrymen. He cannot laugh. No, he would be in a better condition to weep the entire day. However, when he is working in the palace and standing before the face of the king, he must be cheerful. No one may come near the king with a sad face. It could possibly cost him his life. Nehemiah tries to appear jolly, but he is not successful, for sadness dwells in his heart, and how can he produce a cheerful face? He cannot help himself, but a gloomy expression appears on his face. Artaxerxes notices this and looks at him inquisitively. Suddenly he asks, Nehemiah, why are you sad? What is the trouble? I can see you are not sick. Is there something oppressing you? Is there something which causes your heart to grieve? Nehemiah is shocked, and he is afraid. He answers with a trembling voice, O king, live forever. Yes, you have seen aright. I am sad, and for I have heard that the city of my fathers is still in ruins. I have heard that the gates and walls of Jerusalem are not yet repaired. That is why I am so grieved, and that is why my face appears so sad. So, the news is out. What will be the answer of the king? Will he be angry? No, it exceeds Nehemiah's expectations. Artaxerxes does not become angry. He asks kindly, What is your request? It is as if he asks, Can I help you? Can I do anything for you? Just say the word. Nehemiah is silent for a moment. He trembles. A sigh goes up from his heart to God. O children, do not think the Lord only hears long prayers. No, indeed not. He will hear even if it is only one word. Yes, even if it is only a sigh. God will hear and answer the short prayers just as well as the long ones. The Lord does not need many words. Sometimes we think long prayers help. No, not long prayers, but a true and upright prayer, even if it is short, is heard and answered by the Lord. This sigh of Nehemiah is also heard by the living God. King, he finally says, may I go to Jerusalem? May I rebuild the walls and gates of Jerusalem? Artaxerxes looks serious. He turns to look at his wife, who is sitting next to him. He doesn't want to part with Nehemiah. He will never be able to get such a good cupbearer again. Yet, he doesn't want to refuse either. He gives it a little thought. A tense quietness prevails for a while. Good, he says at last. I will let you go, but not to stay. When you are finished with the work, you must return. Of course, Nehemiah makes a promise, and Artaxerxes lets him go. Nehemiah was glad. God answered his prayers. Preparations are made for the long journey. The king sends as guards a troop of horsemen with a few captains to accompany him. They must protect him on the hazardous trip, for the king would not like to see Nehemiah meet with an accident or be attacked by a band of robbers. Behold, there they go. Nehemiah is full of courage, because he has letters with him, letters from Artaxerxes. The governors must help him. He may chop down out of the king's forest the timber needed for the building. Up to now, the Lord has taken care of him in a wonderful way. A company of strangers rides into the city of Jerusalem. They pass the burnt gates and ride through the streets of the city. The inhabitants of Jerusalem see them. But it is usual for strangers to come there. Therefore, they scarcely notice this company of travelers. But if they had known who the one traveler was and what he has come to do, they would have come running joyfully to meet him. Rejoicing would have prevailed throughout the city. But they do not know, and therefore they do not shout for joy. But this stranger knows what he has come for. He smiles when he sees the crumbled wall and the black charcoal charred gates. With the help of God, these things will change. For this reason he made that long and dangerous journey to come to Jerusalem. This traveler is Nehemiah. 4 months ago he left the city of Shushan, and only now he rides into Jerusalem. Such a long journey, isn't it? 4 months. Ah, yes, traveling today goes a bit faster, doesn't it? The first 3 days, he doesn't do a thing. I should think he deserves a little rest from the fatigue of the journey. Don't you think so, too? But at the end of these 3 days, it is night. Everything in Jerusalem is resting soundly. The Jews have locked the doors of their houses as well as they can, for it is very unsafe upon the streets at night. The city lies so exposed. Now and then we can hear the soft yelp of a jackal, a sort of wolf or dog. These animals prowl around the houses and sniff at the doors, seeking a little food. But the people are asleep. Quiet! Listen! Here comes someone. A few people approach slowly and carefully. Who are they? A pack of knaves? Thieves? Murderers? Robbers? Of course not. They are Nehemiah and a few men who are guiding him. Isn't Nehemiah sleeping now? No. Why not? Ah, Now that he is completely rested, he will go to work. He wants to make a thorough inspection of the walls of Jerusalem. He wants to see if it is as bad as he fears. But must he do it just at night? It could be done much better in the daytime when it is light, couldn't it? Yes, that is true. But if he does it during the day, all the people will see it. They will ask him why he is making this inspection. First, he must look over the situation. First, he must know what the condition is. And then he will make himself known. Then he will tell what plans he has, and he will read to them the letters of King Artaxerxes. Won't they be glad and surprised? With this nice thought in mind, Nehemiah smiles while he cautiously rides onward. He leaves the city, but then turns, going parallel with the wall, and rides completely around the city. As he goes, he stops now and then. He had hoped things wouldn't be so bad, but it is worse than his fears. So much rubbish lies in some places that the beast upon which he rides cannot walk further. After a difficult expedition over stones and rubbish, he returns to his lodging. Now he knows what there is to do. There is a great deal to do before the wall is put to rights. Astonishing! It will be an enormous project to rebuild the wall again. The next morning he assembles the priests and rulers. He tells them who he is and for what purpose he has come. He also shows them the letters which King Artaxerxes had written. Come, he says, you see the misery you are in. The gates of the city are burned with fire, and the wall is broken. But let us together try to restore what is destroyed. They listen in utmost astonishment. Slowly, a glad expression spreads over their faces. Their eyes glitter with joy. When Nehemiah finally ceases speaking, they answer spontaneously, "Yes, we will rebuild the walls and the gates." This report goes through the city as a spreading fire. A shock of joy speeds through all the people. Even far in the distance, it becomes known what is going to take place in Jerusalem. Oh, it is an enormous project, a gigantic piece of work. But that doesn't matter. They come running from all sides to help. The enemies of the Jews also hear it, but they are not glad. They think it is terrible. No, Jerusalem may not be rebuilt. It all must remain as it is. Jerusalem may not become a strong city again. They will try again to see if they can hinder it. They did so before when the Jews rebuilt the temple. In the beginning, they had been somewhat successful. Who knows? Probably they will be successful again. What are you going to do? They ask, and then scornfully add, "Yes, we can readily understand what your plans are. After the wall is finished, you will rebel against the king of Persia. You want to resist the authorities." They hope the Jews will frighten so much from these words, and they would not dare to continue at this work. But Nehemiah gives them this answer: "The God of heaven will prosper us. We will build, but you have nothing to do here." And the Jews soon begin to build. Everyone helps. The high priest and the priests, rich and poor, young and old, gather themselves together and begin to work diligently. They do not all begin at one place, for they would be in each other's way. No, they divide the complete wall into sections, and each group works on its own portion. This way, they can make better progress. First, the rubbish is cleaned up and taken away. New stones are brought, and the foundation is laid. The bottom portion of some parts can remain as it is. There is nothing wrong with it, and they can build on it as usual. The burned beams and doors at the gates are taken away. New gates are made, which are thick and solid, big and heavy. The timber for them is cut from the king's forest. Everyone works with pleasure and diligence. Nehemiah regulates and governs everything. Slowly but surely, the walls rise higher. They work steadily on it from early morning until late at night, even until it is dark. Sanballat and Tobiah, two Samaritans, also hear that the work progresses steadily. Oh, they stamp their feet from envy and hatred. They attempt to discourage the Jews. They begin to ridicule the builders. Sanballat yells scoffingly and scornfully, "Does this small group of despised Jews really think they shall finish that work?" Tobiah, the Ammonitish servant, answers mockingly, "Ah, let them build. Afterwards, when the wall is finished and a fox walks over it, the whole affair will crumble in a heap. Ha ha!" He laughs contemptuously. Mockery is always a dangerous weapon. We do not want to be mocked. No, we want to be praised. To be mocked is painful. Not painful to the body, but painful to the soul, which is much worse. How many boys and girls have gone the wrong way because of the mocking of their boyfriends or girlfriends? How many are there who have cast the serious warnings and admonitions of their fathers and mothers to the wind? Hell lies full of mockers. O children, you too must endure mockery and scorn if you by grace are privileged to walk in the ways of the Lord. But never forget this one thing. Those that now mock the loudest will one day yell and cry the loudest. Let them mock. Ask the Lord for strength so you may be able to bear it. Sanballat and Tobiah hope the Jews will become discouraged and that they would stop building. If this should happen, they would have their way. But it does not happen. Nehemiah prays to God for strength and perseverance. He encourages the builders by saying to them they should not concern themselves with anything which these men say, and the Jews let their enemies mock. Calmly, yet as quickly as possible, the work is set forth. The walls continually rise higher. Sanballat and Tobiah, with other enemies of the Jewish people, soon notice that their mocking does not help. The Jews act as if they are deaf, as though they hear nothing. This causes their enemies to become enraged. Together they consider what they should do, for that work must and shall cease. Jerusalem may not be restored. Jerusalem must remain a weak and exposed city, without walls and gates. Do you know what they do? They muster an army and plan to take Jerusalem suddenly and off their guard. They will surprise them and force their way into the city before anyone can realize it, and they will kill the builders on the walls. The Jews will be unable to continue, and the work will cease of itself. It is a nice plan. Or if it succeeds, they are victorious. But it does not succeed, for Nehemiah is warned. It reaches the ears of the Jews who live close to the border of the Samaritans. They hurry to Jerusalem to tell what the Samaritans and the other hostile nations have planned to do. And not only one brings a message, no, Nehemiah is warned at least 10 times. Nehemiah frightens for a moment because it is dangerous. But then, Immediately, he takes precautions. He appoints watchers who will watch day and night. The builders, the masons, the carpenters, and the bearers of burdens also are armed. They build with one hand, while they hold their weapons in the other. Now let the enemy come. The Jews will defend themselves, and that bravely too. The work does not prosper as quickly as it did at the beginning. The labor is much more difficult, and they get so tired. Alas, some workmen want to quit working. They become so sorrowful and discouraged. But Nehemiah says, "Aren't you wiser? Stop and leave the work?" "Never. No, keep building. You mustn't become discouraged so quickly." And the building continues. They do not cease with the work. Nehemiah is able to talk away the discouraged temper of the people. When Sanballat and Tobiah hear that Nehemiah had armed the people, and that the walls and gates are guarded day and night, they dare not attack the city. They remain at home. Their plan, which they had guarded so carefully, failed completely. All other plans also fail, as we shall see. A few days later, Sanballat and Tobiah contrive another idea. They send a message to Nehemiah with the friendly request for him to come to them. They are anxious to talk with him. But that is not true. They want to kill him. Why? They know very well that Nehemiah is the man who governs and regulates everything. If they could only murder him, then that great undertaking would come to a standstill. Therefore, they ask Nehemiah to come to them. If he would only come out of the city and into the open spaces, they would cut him down. Oh, if Nehemiah does, it is his end. But look once, when the messenger asks this of Nehemiah, and he is waiting for an answer, Nehemiah shakes his head decidedly. "No," he answers, "I am far too busy. I have no time." He knows very well the intention of Sanballat and Tobiah. He sees through their wicked plan. He does not intend voluntarily to place himself in danger. The messenger leaves disappointedly. Shortly thereafter, he again returns with the same request, but Nehemiah refuses the second time. 4 times the enemy tries to allure Nehemiah out of the city, but Nehemiah refuses 4 times. There comes the youth for the 5th time. He has a letter in his hand. Nehemiah takes the letter and reads it. First, a look of astonishment comes upon his face. Then, almost unnoticeably, a smile. Ah, he understands what their intentions are. What did he read? What is written in the letter? Listen. "Do you know what is told among us?" Sanballat and Tobiah write. "When the wall is finished, you will declare yourself a king. Everyone talks about it here. If the king hears it, it could cost you your life. Come, and let us talk peaceably together. Let us see what is to be done about it." They hope Nehemiah will now become afraid and will come to them outside the city. They would take care that he would never enter it again. But Nehemiah laughs about it and sends the young man back for the 5th time with this message. "All that you write are lies. You have made them all up yourself. I am not coming. I will not do it." Disappointedly, Sanballat and Tobiah clench their fists. Everything, yes, everything they try fails. Nehemiah is walking through the streets of the city. A little later, he enters a house which stands close to the temple. a priest lives there, and undoubtedly this priest had called Nehemiah. He immediately goes to this man, for he has respect and esteem for the priests of the Lord. He asks him what it is and why he had to come. "Oh," the priest says with a whispering voice, "the Lord has made known to me that enemies are coming tonight who will murder you. Happily, I can warn you. You should come with me, then I can hide you within the inner court of the house of the Lord. The enemies cannot find you there." Isn't that nice of this priest? Don't you think so? He will deliver Nehemiah from death. Nehemiah surely will be thankful. But he shakes his head and says, "No, I will not do it." Isn't that unwise of Nehemiah? Yes, it seems so, but it is not so, for the priest's statements are lies and deceit. The Lord did not send him, and he does not speak this prophecy by the Spirit of the Lord, but secretly he is a friend of Sanballat and Tobiah. They had bribed him with gold. He does not want to deliver Nehemiah out of their hands, but he wants to ruin him, because Nehemiah may not enter into the holy place of the temple. No one but the priests were permitted to enter the holy place, for the Lord had strictly forbidden it. Oh, that is mean, so exceedingly base of this priest. He is a deceiver and a liar. Shame on you. Are you a priest, a servant of the Most High God? How dare you? It was well that Nehemiah immediately recognized it. God kept him from that sin, and also from the dangers which threatened him. Again, this vile effort of Sanballat and Tobiah to cause Nehemiah to fall into distress by means of a priest fails. By this, Nehemiah knew at the same time that even within the walls of Jerusalem, and there were enemies of his. Thus, he had to be doubly careful. There is a feast in Jerusalem. Feast? Why? You already know, don't you? The walls of Jerusalem are rebuilt, and the gates are restored. The enormous work is finished. It took them only 52 days to do all this work. No one dared to hope for that. The enemies, Sanballat and Tobiah, also hear this. This alarms them. For them, this is a sad affair. Jerusalem is no longer an exposed city, but wide walls and heavy gates will protect the city from now on against all enemies. The Samaritans are now discouraged and sad, for they can notice that God has helped the Jews. That is why the Jews celebrate feast in Jerusalem. A long procession approaches the repaired and renewed wall. After they have come to the base of the wall, they climb to the top. Nehemiah has divided them into two groups. The one group goes to the right. Ezra walks with them. The other group goes toward the left. Nehemiah walks with this group. The priests blow the trumpets. The people shout for joy and are glad. Why wouldn't they be glad? Now that their scorn and shame is taken away. In this way they walk on the wall and around the city in both directions. These groups meet on the other side and go together to the house of the Lord, the temple, to thank God for this great blessing. All efforts of the enemies to stop the work or hinder it have failed. The Lord had given the Jewish workers strength to finish the work, and now the Lord only must receive all the honor. The enormous project for which Nehemiah had come to Jerusalem has been accomplished. However, he did not return to Persia directly. Some say he remained in Jerusalem for 12 years. During that time, he with Ezra sought the welfare of his nation. Once again, Ezra read the laws of the Lord to all the people, and for they must never forget them. The Jewish nation must continue to live according to the institutions of the Lord. They had to be continually reminded of them. Finally, Nehemiah returns to King Artaxerxes. He had promised to do so, didn't he? He again becomes cupbearer at the court of the king. During his lifetime, Nehemiah came to Jerusalem again for the second time. It came about this way. While he was performing his daily work in Persia with the king, he heard that things were not going very well at Jerusalem. This grieved him a great deal. Again, he could not sleep at night from it. Do you know what? He will ask the king if he can go once more to the land of Canaan. He asked Artaxerxes, and the king again gave his permission. But he frightened when he arrived at Jerusalem. Many things happened during the time of his absence, but not much good. One of the priests became a good friend of Tobiah, the dangerous enemy of the Jewish people. We read in the Bible that he was allied to him. Probably Tobiah was married to one of his daughters. Yes, Tobiah even lived in Jerusalem, in one of the chambers which was built onto the temple, which was really part of the temple. When Nehemiah heard this, he became angry. He set all the furniture of Tobiah on the street and drove him away. He didn't belong there. Tobiah was not allowed to live there. Those chambers were built for the priests, but not for a Samaritan. He really was not even a Samaritan. He was an Ammonite who undoubtedly accepted the religion of the Samaritans. But other sinful, wicked deeds were committed in the city. All kinds of merchants walked in the streets of the city on the Sabbath, the day of the Lord, the day of rest, and they sold their wares as if it were an ordinary work day. That wasn't keeping the Sabbath day holy, was it? No selling or buying may be done on that day. The Sabbath must be spent in the worship of the Lord. Do you permit that? Nehemiah asks indignantly of the nobles of the city. You know, don't you, that the Sabbath is a holy day, a day of rest? Do you know what he did? The following week, he caused the gates to be locked on the evening before the Sabbath, and they remained locked all during the Sabbath day. The merchants could not enter into the city and had to remain outside the wall. The following week it was done again. Nehemiah decided to put an end to this. He said to them, "If you dare come here again on the Sabbath, I will imprison you. You may come here every workday, but you must remain at home on the Sabbath. Do you understand?" Yes, then they didn't come any more. From this time forward, no yelling merchants walked through Jerusalem on the Sabbath. Nehemiah put a stop to it. Another sin was that several Jews were married with heathen women. This was the case during the time of Ezra too, wasn't it? Nehemiah saw to it that these heathen women were sent away with their children. Nehemiah did many more things, but I cannot tell you all of them, for you would not understand them. Some say that Nehemiah returned later to Persia, and there he died. Is that true? I do not know. The Bible is silent about it. But one thing is certain, God was pleased to use Nehemiah to keep the Jews from a total departure from him. If the Lord had not sent Ezra and Nehemiah, it would have turned out very ill with the Jewish nation. These men have, as a means in God's hand, brought back their nation to the institutions of the Lord.